Hare Krishna and welcome. Today, the title of my talk is True Leadership is Born of Dharma. True leadership is born of Dharma. I'm a person who's always interested in leadership, management, authority. It's one of those things that I'm interested in that concerns me. So we know from Bhagavad Gita, Chaturvarnya Maya Srishtam, Guna Karma Vibhagashaha. The four varnas are the natural divisions of society created, Maya Srishtam, by me, says Krishna. Created by God himself, not by man. We're not talking about the corrupt caste system, as we know it now in India after so many years, what it has become. We're talking about the natural divisions of society. And we can find these divisions in every society historically around the world, not just in India. So we have Brahmins, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, Shudras. The Brahmins are intellectuals. These are the seekers of after knowledge. The Kshatriyas are the administrative class, the organizers, the protectors. The Vaishyas are those who produce economy, business, trade, farming, anything to do with economy. And the Shudras are the labor class, provide labor, tradesmen, craftspeople, as we know. All of these segments of society are absolutely necessary. You cannot do without any of them. But today I'm going to focus on the Kshatriyas, the administrative class, the leaders, the organizers, the managers, the kings, the queens, politicians. Most of this class is going to be straight from Prabhupada's lips. And I'm just going to, you know, connect the dots. Most of it is going to be just from Prabhupada, because I personally cannot improve on Prabhupada. I don't have the depth. I don't have the realization. I don't have the purity. I don't have the connection that he has. So even though it is expected of all of us to develop our own insight and realization and perception, so that a philosophy becomes alive for you, not static, dynamic. That you have a realization, a revelation of your own, which is also legitimate, as long as it's not off in some netherworld or fairyland, you know. But if it is in keeping with a philosophical, a body of philosophy such as we are presented with Vedanta, and it doesn't go against that, then your revelations, we use this as our starting point, Vedanta and the Vedas. Yeah. And then we get our own realizations. Okay. So a Kshatriya is a leader, organizer, protector, warrior, manager, facilitator. The Kshatriya carries the danda. The rod. We've seen for many years in different cultures the king or the queen has the stick, but it's usually very formal and it's usually made out of gold and set with jewels as a what's the word I'm using? The
scepter.
Yeah, the scepter, but it's more idealized form of it. But it comes down to what? It's the stick. What is this stick? It's just a fancy stick with jewels in it? No, it's the scepter. It's the danda. It's the rod of chastisement. It gives them the ability to make laws and enforce laws. That's what it is. That's what it means. So they carry the scepter. Now, Kshatriya, it comes from Kshata, and Tria comes from Traya in Sanskrit. So Kshata means to wound, to injure, to break, to destroy. And Traya means to carry a cross, to protect, to bring along, to shelter. Traya. Kshatriya. These are the two duties of Kshatriya. To make the law, to enforce the law, and to protect the people. Which can we do without? We can't. Otherwise, we have chaos. Otherwise, we won't have civilization, will we? Then it's the law of the jungle. These are the distinguishing traits of a Kshatriya according to Srimad Bhagavatam, 11th canto. Majesty. When a king or a queen walks into the room, well, I mean, Prabhupada was a wonderful example. You know, when Prabhupada walked into the room, he went, pfft. The energy, you know, the nobility, the bearing. Now, he was, you know, a spiritual guy. He wasn't doing the Kshatriya thing, but you've met people like this. They just carry a presence. And your respect for them is immediate. They have shakti. They have energy. They have charisma. Huh? Ideally. Natural king. Natural queen. Natural leader. Not somebody who's pretending to be a leader. Huh? You've met one or two of those too, no? Okay. Majesty, strength, fortitude, valor, forbearance, liberality. Liberality, in other words, say liberality would be mercy, understanding. Trying to understand where everybody is coming from and what they need. Liberality. Not just being unreasonable and this is law and that's all there's to it. No. That doesn't work either. Industry. He's not afraid of work. Firmness. Devotion to the Brahmins. Devotion to the Brahmins. We'll get into that a little bit more as we go. And, of course, rulership. Can you organize anything? Can you manage? Can you delegate? Can you delegate authority? Can you organize people and get them all to function as a unit, as a whole? Because if you can't, as we know in business, in the real world, you know, some managers are very, very expert at organizing people and things, one thing after another happens, right? Everybody knows their job and they do it. Other managers are, they don't know what's happening over their heads. Then we have chaos or simply nothing gets done or very little gets done, right? And those of us who work in the so-called real world, in the material world, we know this is exactly what happens, no? What is the main duty of a kshatriya? What is its main duty? To see that everyone, all the citizens, are executing their svadharma. That they're executing their occupational duty. That he is making sure he's organizing in such a way that everybody gets to do what they want to do by nature. Guna karma vibhagashaha. According to their nature and their inclination toward a certain kind of work. That's the number one duty of the Kshatriya, of the organizer. If you run a business, you try to find people who are good at certain tasks that you need in your business. And you try to find the man or the person to fit the task, do you not? As opposed to finding somebody, you do this and the guy's no good at it. What's the point? Right? Then it says in the Vedas, if one does not follow their svadharma, their own path, Then dharmenahi na pashubi samana. Prabhupada has quoted this, I don't know how many times. Dharmenahi na pashubi samana. That without dharma, we are no better than the pashu. What is a pashu? An animal. Animal. Animals, they eat, we eat. They sleep, we sleep. They mate, we mate. They have to go out and make a living, earn a living, get food, build a nest, whatever. We do the same thing. In this way, we and the animals are the same. So what sets us apart? Our brain, our intellect, and our ability to understand spirit, spirituality. That takes us to the next level. It is the duty of the father in a family and the teacher to train the children in principles of Swadharma, of fulfilling their own dharma, purpose, and talents and abilities to fulfill themselves as individuals and to make a contribution to the world around us. Right? Obviously. It is the duty of the leaders to ensure that the people are being educated also in morality, virtue, and spirituality. What does that mean? Very simply, that they're good people, not bad people. That they're good people, that they're making contribution. They're not stealing. They're not preying upon others. They're not predators. They're not thieves. They're not killers, etc. Huh? That's obvious. So that's morality has, it's a complex subject. We are in Kali Yuga, the Iron Age, the age of conflict, discord, and hypocrisy. So what are we seeing with the moral compass of our society? Declining. Down it goes. Kshatriyas and Brahmins in particular must be truthful. They must be truthful. A man's word is his bond. Huh? Look at Ramayana. Look what happened in the Ramayana when Dasharath had promised two boons to Kaikeyi, and then she saved them for later, and later came and Ram was banished to the forest. But he had no choice. The king's word must be golden. You don't say one thing and do another. In a political campaign, they promise you this, that, the other, and a few other things. And they give you what? Do they give you even like half of it? No. Maybe they give you this much. In reality, that's really how it works. I'm not exaggerating, by the way. So his word must be his bond, and herein lies his power. Is that true for us as well? Oh yes, my friends. It is absolutely true for us as well. Your power comes from speaking the truth. Truth has a power of its own accord. When you constantly speak the truth, it takes on a shakti or a power or a life of its own. There's an energy that comes with it. And after time, you can even bless people. I wish you well. Have a nice day. I hope you succeed in your exams. I hope you get that job that you wanted. Yeah, that's my wish for you. To the point where it actually could help materialize something in the world for people. That's where we could bring the truth to. Am I exaggerating? I don't think so. If God says you can do this, this is my boon, my blessing for you, what happens? Immediately, it happens. Then, by the same token, as we become more godly, godlike, realized, spiritualized, is it not the same for us then? Then when we wish something good for somebody, the likelihood of it happening because of our wishes becomes greater and greater. Is it logical? Here's a quote from the Vidura Niti. Where do we find the Vidura Niti? In the
Mahabharata.
Vidura says, it is easy to find people who say what others want to hear. You ever meet any of them? But it is the rare person that is hard to find who speaks words that are disagreeable, but at the same time create healing in the heart of the listener. He tells you what you absolutely don't want to hear. Instead of making you angry, which most people would be, yeah, well, you too, you know? No. A transformation takes place and helps you to see things differently. Opens up your heart, opens up your mind, makes you more receptive. If it's the truth. If it's the truth. Such a person, he continues, who speaks words that uphold virtue, dharma, increases strength and truth in the heart of his listener. That's what Vidura said. Right? So, Parashuram, when Parashuram, who is an incarnation of Vishnu, was on the planet, which was Treta Yuga, he is a Brahmin. But there were corrupt leaders, Kshatriyas, a corrupt ruling society. And he organized armies. These armies, which actually I found out the rest of this today, coincidentally, when I was on the phone to my godbrother in Udupi, who's living in Udupi now, Karnataka, no? And he was mentioning Parashuram coincidentally and saying that his armies were composed of Brahmins who had become Kshatriyas. Because there were no Kshatriyas to fight the Kshatriyas because they were all corrupt. So the Brahmins had to step down into Kshatriya mode and they destroyed these corrupt leaders. Once? No. 21 generations, if you can wrap your mind around 21 generations of them. That's a lot. And Prabhupada mentions, interestingly, as he speaks about this, he says, some of them fled, these Kshatriyas who escaped, and came to Europe. Well, I'm sure it wasn't called Europe back then. And went to places such as Turkey, Greece, and other places. That's what Prabhupada said. Now, in our modern society, they go on and on about the separation of church and state. You cannot have anything to do with leadership and spirituality. They don't mix. They just don't mix. It must be a secular state where spirituality, morality, virtue, right action don't come into play. We don't want any of that. Now, I might go with maybe they don't want a specific religion because there are many different religions and isms, Catholicism, Protestantism, Judaism, Islamism, Mohammedanism, or whatever it was called. No, they may be not a specific religion, but we still need morality and virtue. So we need the Brahmins who are... What is... Brahmin means someone who is concerned with Brahma. And which is what? It's spirit. Spiritual knowledge, spiritual understanding, who leads a spiritual lifestyle and who focuses on that and therefore is close to God. Does it mean it has to be in a certain religion? No, not necessarily. But it has to be a genuine spiritual person who has realization. The Kshatriya, the leader, needs to have such advisors. Absolutely essential. So Prabhupada, these are Prabhupada's words now. Prabhupada says a secular society means that you can do whatever nonsense you like as long as you pay the taxes. We don't really care what you do. Just make sure you pay taxes. Because if you don't, we will come down on you like you cannot imagine. And my wife was telling me the other day that the Irish taxation, revenue here, has computer systems and various systems that are state of the art. They are ahead of everybody. They will catch you no matter what you do. You know, they want your 52% income tax. That's what they want. They want half of everything you make. But that's okay. You can carry on with your nonsense. Doesn't matter. Prabhupada continues. In actuality, it means to ensure that all the citizens are able to do their duty, their dharma, and that they're employed in doing their duty. It is the duty of the Brahmins to see that the Kshatriyas are doing their duty properly. Who's overlooking all of these leaders? And when the thing breaks down, when we find out there's all this corruption, I won't even go into it. I can give you lots of examples in the police force and in the government, in the health system, everywhere. And so what do? Do they get any guidance? No. They set up a committee, or this is a committee of investigation. How long does it take for these committees? 6 months, a year, sometimes 2 years, sometimes 4 years. By this time, you know, and then they get a result, and what happens? Nada. Nothing happens. This is what they do. Instead of getting right to the point, understanding what needs to be applied, and applying it, isn't that the duty of the leader to make decisions like this? I think so. But this is a democratic society. We have to go through all this rigmarole. Then he says, and it is the duty of the Kshatriyas to see that the Brahmins are doing their duty. So the Kshatriyas must watch the Brahmins, and the Brahmins must watch the Kshatriyas. For those who are idle or unemployed, the idle mind becomes the devil's workshop. Everybody should have a job. Those who are able to work, whether they are educated or not, there are jobs you can have if you're not educated, or there are trades you can learn. There are professions. There's many ways to learn something that you can use to make a living and a contribution to society. Some people think that being on the dole, being on welfare, that's a lifestyle. Able-bodied people who can work, who are strong, who are not ill, that's my lifestyle. And when I get my check, I'll go down to the bar, and I'll sit there throughout the day, and I'll read the racing form, and I'll go across to the bookie, I'll make my bets, and I'll come back to the bar, and that's my lifestyle. No. The duty of the Kshatriya is to make sure that doesn't happen. Okay.
With the voluntary field, social welfare lends itself in.
Absolutely.
To voluntary work.
Correct. That's right.
In the welfare state.
Yeah, where I come from, I'm born and raised in Canada and live most of my life in the U.S. Yes, we have welfare. If you need money and maybe you lost your job, we have workman's compensation. They have all that. But you might get it for 6 months. You don't get it in perpetuity for the rest of your life. It doesn't work like that. Unless you're, you know, you get disability. But that's a separate thing. If you're disabled, then the state looks after you. But if you're able-bodied, well, being reliant on the state for people with disabilities is understood. But people who simply don't want to work because they're lazy and they just want to live off the state as though it's an option for a lifestyle.
Yeah.
No. So I'm saying, according to this, the duty of the Kshatriya is to make sure everybody's engaged. Let me continue. There's a little bit more here. Progress. Progress means they employ machines to do the work of 100 men. This is Prabhupada speaking. Subsequently, 100 men become what? Unemployed. Unemployed. Progress. Have you been to a bank lately? Is there any people in there? Machines. Call them up on the phone. See what you get. Machines, recorded messages. Now, that's great for the bank because they don't have to pay all those people. What happens to the people? What about unemployment? The more you have progress, which results in unemployment for the population, this is not real progress. That's what Prabhupada is saying here. This is not progress. This is regress. Yes, we want computers and technology, and yeah, that's all, that's fine. There's nothing wrong with it. But people need to be able to make a living and not be, you know, made redundant because of progress. For society as a whole, the machine has not improved the situation. That's still Prabhupada. It has improved the profits of the capitalists, but it does not improve the conditions of the masses of people. Advancement in technology is considered progress, but if the masses cannot find work or employment and cannot feed themselves, then how can this be regarded as real progress? Now, that's the end of Prabhupada's statement. Now, here's an interesting fact for you. 3.6 billion of the world's population, 3.6 billion people. That's a lot, by the way. Are among the world's poorest people. 3.6 billion are under the poverty line. Yeah. All of those people taken together possess the same amount of wealth as whom? As the world's 9 top billionaires. These 9 people who are billionaires have the same amount of money and assets as these 3.6 billion poor people. Is there something wrong with it? If we had the scales here, what would we get here? They'd be askew. Right? But somehow this goes on. I mean, how many billion can you spend? How many billion did you spend yesterday, Saturday, when everybody goes shopping? Did you spend a billion? Who here spent a billion yesterday? Raise a hand. Show of hands, please. Good. Who's planning to spend a billion this coming week? Brahmachari. The renounced one. In his mind, he can meditate on having $1 billion worth of things that he wants to offer to Krishna. that can be done. If you don't have anything, you say, oh, well, I'd love to offer this and this and that to Krishna, but I don't have anything. It doesn't matter. You can do it in your mind in meditation. Oh, well, that's not the same. Oh, no, it isn't the same. It will have the exact same effect. Depending on what? Depending on your heart. Depending on what your feeling is behind it. If it's genuinely out of love, it will have the same effect. I invite you to spend $1 billion this coming week, if you can add up all things to come to that. Or maybe even a couple hundred, how's that? When inept, here, and this is Prabhupada again. When inept leaders cannot manage the affairs of government effectively, what is their tactic? This is their tactic, in case you didn't know. To divert the attention of the populace to other matters. Okay, we're going to take your mind off, just like a magician does, right? He's doing something with this hand, and this hand, he's going like this, and you're watching this hand, this hand's hiding something, right? That's what the leaders do. In such cases, they often foment strife or conflicts with other countries or engage in actual war. Let's go to war. Get these people's minds off the fact that we can't manage beings. You know, our popularity ratings are just falling at such a tremendous rate. Look at what Mr. Trump is doing. I don't even read about Trump anymore because, I can't keep track of it all. There's too much going on there with him. You know, first he's having a meeting with the Koreans, and he's not, and then he's doing this, and then he's not, and he's yelling at people. And okay, watch the bouncing ball. You know, it's... So, in this way, they identify an external enemy in the form of an adversarial country or people and divert the people's attention away from the problems caused by their own incompetency at home. That's what happens. Here's another quote from Prabhupada. Under war and pestilence. Due to lack of knowledge about the Supreme Lord, people are suffering. Under the false impression of being independent, I can do whatever I like. It's my body. I will make the decisions regarding my body. I can do whatever I like. They commit all kinds of sinful acts, not knowing and not caring for the results. They don't think about karma. Everybody knows about karma. What goes around comes around. You reap what you sow. Pretty much everybody knows about it, but they don't think about it. They don't all believe in reincarnation. If you understand karma and reincarnation, I'm telling you, your life will be so much more peaceful. So much more peaceful. Christians don't believe in reincarnation. In fact, the first editions of the Bible had books in them where reincarnation was talked about. Did you know that? Yes. So they were in the Bible. They removed them. Let's not confuse the people. Let's just keep them connected to the church. The church. Okay. So the people foolishly think they can do, they're free to do as they like. But when, here's the point. When the accumulated volume of sinful actions becomes too great, there's personal karma and there is collective karma. All of us together, collective karma. What's an example of collective karma? Very simple that you can recognize. Pollution. Is pollution not collective karma? If you can't breathe the air and you have to walk around with a mask like this, and you see all the Japanese get off their airplane in the airport, they all got masks on, and the Chinese. Well, they got the most polluted cities. I think the Chinese are ahead now. All right? So when you have this collective karma that builds up, something has to give. Something has to happen. We suffer collective karma in that sense. They suffer the consequences in the form of pestilence or war. There's all kinds of forms of pestilence, right? We don't have to mention them all. You know, the suffering for a lot of people. They think that by politics and meetings, this is Prabhupada, they think that by politics, meetings, investigative committees, they can avoid such things. But that is not possible. Isn't this why, Prabhupada used to go on about, isn't this why they set up the United Nations? So we can all get together and we can agree on things. I think he used to call it the disunited nations. Why? Because everybody's got their own agenda. That's why. They're helpless, he continues, they're helpless to prevent these things. Therefore, they receive their punishment through the threefold miseries of life. What are the threefold miseries of life? Adiatmic, adibautic, and adidaivic. Adiatmic, miseries caused by your own body or mind. Adibautic, miseries caused by other people or animals. And adidaivic, misery sent by the gods, such as what? Floods, flooding, fires, tsunami, lightning, thunderstorms. If there's too much, At just the right moment, nature brings the demons together and engages them in war, says Prabhupada. Oh, let's do a bit of a cleanse here. Then he goes on, if the king is not honest, moral, or truthful, the whole kingdom is spoiled. Wow. Similarly, he mentions an example. If a married woman acts out of loose morality, if a married woman becomes a loose woman, what happens to the family? Does it not spoil the family? Does it not destabilize the family? Oh yes, we know that. The king must be a Rajarshi. A Raja Rishi. Raja means he's the king, and a rishi means sage, a wise person, an enlightened soul. It's not enough to be able to manage. You must also be an enlightened soul. Rajarshi, enlightened leader. He must be an initiated person. He must have undergone, or she, initiation in some spiritual discipline or spiritual background. You must have undergone initiation. If the leader or the government is corrupt, the citizens will follow suit. Well, if they're doing it, I can do it. You know, they're doing it on a whole other level. You know, I'm only doing it on this level. Whatever great men do, lesser people follow. Bhagavad Gita. So whatever famous, popular, powerful, significant people do, everybody wants to do the same, don't they? And they think, he says, if the leaders are doing it, then that must be the way to get ahead in the world. And I want to get ahead. If amorality is the way to get ahead, well, then I'll choose that. So I can, you know, be the same as these other people. There are two prominent Kshatriya dynasties in the Vedas that are commonly mentioned. What are they? Sorry? Suryavansh and Chandravansh. The solar dynasty and the lunar dynasty. Who took birth from the solar dynasty? Which incarnation? Lord Ram. And who came from the lunar dynasty? Shri Krishna. Very nice. Our Lord. Then he talks a little bit about Bhagavad Gita. Now in Bhagavad Gita, this is Krishna trying to convince Arjuna, the great bowsman, the great archer, who's actually the most powerful warrior on the battlefield. And on top of that, Krishna's driving his chariot. Hey, now there's an edge you want. Having Krishna drive your chariot. Krishna says there, no. These are the people here to fight. What are you going to do? Oh, I can't fight. Arjuna says, I can't fight. I couldn't possibly. I know too many people on the other side. I'm actually related to a lot of these people. I couldn't do it. Well, what's your dharma? What are you? What do you mean, what am I? What are you? What social group do you belong to? Well, I'm a prince. I'm a kshatriya. Kshatriya. But you don't want to fight. No, I think I might go to the forest and meditate. Oh. Have you done that before? No. How long will you last in the forest meditating if you haven't done that before? The whole battlefield of Kurukshetra was arranged by Krishna so that all these irresponsible rascals, the leaders of that time, rascals and rogues dressed as kings could be what? Eliminated. So what does this tell us? This is not Treta Yuga, this is now Dwapara Yuga. And now, where we are, it's Kali Yuga. So if they had corrupt leaders in Treta Yuga and in Dwapara Yuga, we're going to get more of the same in Kali Yuga. Are we not? What are the chances? Pretty good, I'd say. So this was Krishna's mission in coming to earth. Paritranaya sadhunam vinashaya chidushkritam. He will destroy the dushkritis, those who are causing mischief, problems, who are abusing their positions of power and authority, which were the Kauravas. Okay, so here's the quote, the verse from Bhagavad Gita, chapter 2, verse 32. He says, Arjuna, happy are the kshatriyas to whom such fighting opportunities come unsought. You didn't even look for it, and here it is. Opening for them the doors of the heavenly planets. Wow. That's a pretty strong statement. People who sacrifice themselves to protect others. People who go to war for justice, just war. Sometimes, I know, it's hard to tell. It's hard to tell. This is the side of righteousness. This is the side of evil. Yeah, are you sure? Nowadays, it's getting more and more confusing, no? People who go to war, the police, who risk their lives, I mean the good police, yeah, not the other kind. People who belong to the fire brigade, fire people, firemen, they risk their lives saving people, going into burning buildings. Rescue service, who rescue people off mountains, pluck them out of the sea, or maybe you. Maybe you. When you see a car accident at the side of the road, and somebody is hemmed into the car, and maybe the car catches fire because the fuel is leaking. And what do? Maybe you risk your life trying to get that person free. Are there such people? Oh yes, there are. Any of these people, including the warriors in Bhagavad Gita, who sacrifice their lives and are killed, doing so, automatically go to the heavenly planets, Svarga. We know from the Vedas that we are living in the earthly planets. 14 levels of planetary systems, but they reduce them down to 3. The heavenly planets, the earthly planets, and the hellish planets. So, is there hell? Hell. You could just sit there. You could live in hell just by listening to your mind. You don't have to go anywhere. Right? Or listening to your spouse. I'm in hell. Help me. All right? You don't have to go far to find hell. But there are hellish planets. Don't think there aren't. So when we talk about heaven here, it's not the same as the way the Christians think of it. There are actually heavenly planets where you go because you have good karma. And you get to live out that good karma in this wonderful... You think it's wonderful here, ain't nothing compared to Svarga. That's where it's way, way more beautiful. And the sense gratification is at a much higher level if you're into that sort of thing. Anyway, you get rewarded for your good deeds. This is the point. Huh? And then, you know, when you run out of your karmic balance of good karma, hey, here he is. He's back. I don't quite recognize him. His body's different, but I think that's him. How's it going? How was Svarga? Yeah, I don't like being back here. No, I know. I didn't like coming down either. Of course not. Once you're there, you don't want to leave. So that's what he says. Opening up the doors of the heavenly planets, Krishna says to Arjuna. So now I'm going to read Prabhupada's purport. As supreme teacher of the world, why? Because he's God. He's Krishna. Lord Krishna condemns the attitude of Arjuna, who said, I do not find any good in this fighting. It will cause perpetual habitation in hell. The thing he's already forgotten, he's already in hell, Arjuna, because he's in so much mental distress. Correct? Anyway, that's a side note, side point. Such statements by Arjuna were due to ignorance only. Oh, my goodness me. Arjuna, the prince, the Pandava, whose friend is God, Krishna. Yeah? I know you got some nice friends. Is Krishna always with you, walking around, talking, doing, say, hey, you hungry? Let's go get something to eat. Yeah? This is, and look what happened to him. And you would say, oh, you know, I wish I could be strong, and I wish I could just be determined and set on my course, but I'm weak, and I falter, and I fail, and I don't know what to do. Oh, God, will you help me? Here's him in the flesh. Well, God's not flesh, sorry. Here he is, in front of Arjuna. And he can't keep it together. He can't stay focused on his duty. What can we expect of you then? Is it not reasonable to expect that you will have these moments of weakness and a sense of failure and a sense of lower self-worth? Of course you will. You're human. Don't be so hard on yourself. Don't be. It's not going to help. Make a correction. Criticize where criticism is necessary. Own it. Own it. Yes, yeah, that's right. I shouldn't have done that. And then move on. Don't drag it around with you like a ball and chain. I'm going to drag this around for the rest of my life, around my ankle. I can't get over it. Well, come on, dude. Let it go already. Move on. Keep up. What do you say to your children when you're walking down the street with your... Come on, keep up. Keep up. All right? Prabhupada continues. Arjuna wanted to become nonviolent in the discharge of his specific duty. He's a... How do you become nonviolent? What are you standing there with a bow and arrows for? I don't like violence. Since when? It's what you're trained in when it's necessary. He wanted to become nonviolent. Okay, for a kshatriya to be on the battlefield and become nonviolent is the philosophy of fools. Yeah, that's the philosophy of fools. In the Parashara Smriti, or the spiritual codes by Parashara Muni, the great sage and father of Vyasadeva, it is stated that the kshatriya's duty is to protect the citizens from all kinds of difficulties. And for that reason, he has to apply violence toward whom? Criminals who prey upon the people. Right? And in suitable cases, in order to maintain law and order. He may also have to conquer the armies of inimical states. Thus, on the basis of spiritual principle and virtue, he should rule over the people. That's the job. You don't like that job? You don't like the job description? Why are you in the job? The kings in olden days, and certainly in Vedic days, when they were waging war, was the king back watching it all on video? Back in the castle or in the bunker, watching it all on video? Here goes the drone, we're going to drop. I missed it. Try that again, please. No. Where's the king?
In the battlefield.
Out front of the army in the battlefield. I'm going to put everybody at risk, but not me. I'm not that foolish to go out there. I'll put all the other people at risk. Is that leadership? No. That's not leadership. Considering all aspects, Arjuna had no reason to refrain from fighting. And if he should conquer his enemies, he would enjoy the kingdom. If he would die in the battle, he would be elevated to the heavenly planets. That's what Krishna is telling him. So we talked about the scepter that the leader holds. The king is also called Shastrapani. What does that mean? Shastrapani. Pani is hand. And Shastra is weapon. He comes with a weapon in his hand. Looking for a fight? No. To protect the innocent. To protect the innocent. So, nowadays, they get caught stealing or something like this. What happens? They get arraigned, and then the court session is put off, and it's put off, and it's put off, and months go by, sometimes years go by, depending how clever your lawyer is, depending how much money you got for a good attorney. Yeah? And then maybe he goes to jail for a few days. I was saying to my friends in America, of course, jokingly, I'd say, is there anybody you'd just like to kill? And my friend said, yeah, I can think of one or two people. I said, well, then you should invite them to Ireland, all expenses paid. Tell them you're going to take them on a trip to Ireland. And then when you're in Ireland, you knock them off. You kill them, however. And if they don't catch you, great, you go back. And if they catch you, what happens? They give you 7 years for murder in Ireland. And you get 5 for good behavior. You'll be out in 5 years. And the guy will be gone. I mean, how can you lose? That's my joke. It's no punishment. The murder and slaughter of innocents is acceptable and even legislated in the modern Western world due to the influence of Kali Yuga. Here's another statistic for you. 56 billion animals are killed in abattoirs, slaughterhouses around the world yearly. 56 billion animals, innocent animals, are killed for what? Mostly for food and some for other body parts. Do you think there's no karma attached to that? Oh, no, there's no karma. You can just go around killing any animal, take his life away without asking his permission. It's no problem. No, there's karma. What do you think is going to happen when we keep doing that in an industrialized level? You think we're not going to get negative karma? Look at America. America is the number one producer of weaponry in the world. Real sophisticated stuff, too. I mean, the high-end stuff that you can't afford unless you're a billionaire, right? Or you run a government. And they have all the children, so many children, are walking into schools with guns and doing what? Executing their fellow students and their teachers. How many times has this happened now? Many, many, many. And everybody's going, whoa, I don't understand. Why is this happening? I'll tell you why it's happening. Because you're producing all this weaponry. You're exporting it around the world. And people are being killed with it. And you think, because what? You know, you made a profit on the weaponry? That's that? No. It doesn't work like that. Oh, you can say, well, nobody's invading America. No, they don't have to. Your children are invading America. Your children are killing your children. Who's the most aggressive, warlike country in the world right now? America. They're in more wars than you can count. And if one comes to an end, they just find another one. Oh, why don't we, let's go to the Middle East. It's got to be a country there we haven't invaded yet. Well, there's only two left. Okay, pick one of those. And off they go. And they devastate it, and then what do? Repair it? And restore it? Where do they do that? Where? Nowhere. They don't. Many, many lives are lost and overturned, upended. Well, you think this won't come back to haunt you? Oh, it will. 56 billion animals a year. How many babies are aborted in the U.S. yearly? 700,000. But now we have the overthrow of the Eighth Amendment. As of 2 days ago. The Eighth Amendment is a law that has been instituted by the European Union. It is the accepted law in the European Union. And it provides for the protection of the mother and the unborn fetus. Nothing grows without the presence of spirit. That's a fact. If you don't understand that through your own understanding, then I will tell you it is stated in the Vedas. Nothing grows without spirit, including a fetus in the womb. You can say it's not fully formed. Yeah, we know it's not fully formed. Take the ultrasound. We can see that. That doesn't mean it's not growing. That doesn't mean there's no soul in there. So we overthrew that. Which part did we overthrow? We just took the unborn out. Let's just remove that conveniently. Now we can do all the abortion we want. We are such an enlightened, permissive society. And there will be no negative reaction to any of this. We just do as we want. Because we're so hip, we're so liberal, we're so enlightened. Okay. Yes, I understand the need for a woman to be protected in certain circumstances. I get it. I've had many, many clients, literally hundreds that have had abortions. Not all of them, but many of them have suffered emotionally and psychologically from having abortions, which they told me in confidence. So, the king's job is to protect the people. Releasing murderers and rapists to the street is not protecting the people. Allowing gangs of thieves to traverse the countryside and go into remote farmers' houses where these older people are living by themselves or with their spouse, or their spouse has died, and then beating the hell out of them and stealing whatever you can steal. No. It says in the Vedas that there must be two criteria upon which we will pay tax. Upon which receiving, we shall pay tax. Tax is legitimate to the government. Taxes have always been there. We understand that. And how you run a government unless we pay tax? And these two criteria are what? That the society is protected from within and without by the leaders. From within and without. What does that mean? From within, it means against what? Disease. Ill health. It is the duty of the government to protect the citizens and look after them when they're not healthy and give them the facilities they need. That's number one. Number two, without means invaders. It could be. Fortunately, we haven't had too many invaders in Ireland recently. They had 800 years of invasion with the British. 800 years of occupation by the British. Huh? Can you imagine? I can't. 800 years. I mean, it means to protect the people against criminals. Those who prey upon the people, who exploit the people, who cheat the people, who kill the people, who rape the people. And if these things are not being done by the leaders, guess what? You don't have to pay tax. You can quote me. That's why you pay tax. Those two things in particular. So, now, I'll stop being naive for a few minutes. And I'll wrap it up by saying, do I actually think that we're going to be able to turn all this around at this point in time in Kali Yuga? No, my friends.
You told us if someone saves someone and being killed in it, he goes to the heaven. Right?
Yeah.
But if someone has done many bad deeds in his past, like he might have killed hundreds of humans and at the last he tried to save someone and got killed. So is he eligible to go to heaven?
Yes. This is explained very clearly at the end of the Mahabharata. When Yudhishthira goes up to Swarga, Duryodhana is there. What's he doing there? He's the great antagonist. He's the bad guy in the battle, and here he is in the heavenly plans. And it was explained to him that you have good karma and you have bad karma. You have both. Whatever the lesser of the two is, you get that first. So In Duryodhana's case, the lesser of the two was he had some good karma because he looked after the people when he was the king, and he did certain things, and he gave in charity, and he supported the Brahmins, etc. So he was enjoying his good karma first. Then after, he'd be going down to the hellish worlds for the rest of it. So that's how it works. If you have a lot of good karma, but you have some negative, then you're going to suffer first for the negative, and then you will have the good karma, according to Mahabharata. But the best thing to do is to get rid of all the karma. So we are here, we chant Hare Krishna, we offer everything to Krishna, we offer our food to Krishna, and our actions, our activities, everything. And in doing so, what happens? It generates no karma. And when you have no karma at the end of your life, and your focus is on spirit, is on God, your relationship with Krishna, you do not return to the material world. It is way better than going to the heavenly planets, because that's our home. Prabhupada said, back to home, back to God. And how many times have you gone out? Sometimes on a trip, sometimes you're just shopping, sometimes you're going out in the evening, whatever. And then you look at each other and you go, oh, I can't wait to go home. How many people have said that? I can't wait to go home. Yes, everybody. Why do you want to go home? Because that's where I live. That's my home, my hearth. That's where I belong. Huh? The spiritual world is our home. This is not our home, my friends. That's why you're having such a hell of a time trying to feel at home here. Huh? Some of us are better at feeling at home. But all of us at times go, I just don't like it here. I don't like it here. I want to get me out of here. Right? So we invite you. Chant Hare Krishna. And let's all go home. Back to God. Thank you. Good day.